still rocking after all these years.
This is the story of my rock and roll butler.
This is it, the show that started it all. Often imitated, but never equal. From San Francisco, USA, online since 2004, it's the one and only Rock and Roll Geek Show with the original rock and roll geek, Michael Butler.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Geek Show. My name's Michael Butler. Thanks a lot for joining me. I really appreciate it. Today is Wednesday, December 14th, 2016, when I'm recording this show open. I say show open. By the way, it is 2:51 p.m. I say show open because tonight, this afternoon, I'm going to be doing what is called a Rock and Roll Geek rerun. This was suggested to me by Eric Mortensen, the metal CPA and host of Morta's Metal Museum podcast. He texted me today and said he had just listened to this interview that I did way back in 2007 or something like that, a long time ago. Yeah, like November 8th, 2007 to be exact. That would be, 20 years ago? I don't know. Math ain't me forte. All right. So for Eric Mortensen, at his suggestion, I'm going to be, and on day two of the 12 days of podcasting in December, I guess this will count as my day two, I'm going to be rerunning an interview that I did with the great Bill LaCoin, manager of KISS. May he rest in peace. He managed KISS, and he managed STARS, and he managed Billy Idol. Didn't he manage Billy Squire as well? And this band Lordy, a legend, a rock and roll legend. And he, thanks to my ex-super producer Shane, who lined this up, this was a great one, man. I cannot believe I talked to him, but I did back in 2007, and that's what I'm going to play for you now, friends. I don't think I'm going to play any music. I'm just going to go right into the Bill LaCoin interview. I could not find it, actually, because all my old shows, if you go back into the archives at rockandrollgeek.com, a lot of the old shows you can't listen to because they were on the Podshow or Mevio servers, and Mevio, the links to all the episodes were links to Podshow to files that were on Podshow servers, and Podshow deleted everything in Mevio when Podshow became Mevio. So those were lost for good, and I have most of them on one of my mini hard drives, but I could not find the finished product of the Bill LaCoin interview. I don't know. I think Eric Mortensen might have listened to it on YouTube. I don't know. But I did manage to find the raw file of me interviewing Bill LaCoin. So I'm just going to play that for you. Screw it. Just unedited, which I didn't edit. A lot of times back then I would edit music into, and I don't know if I even did that because I can't go back and listen to this episode. I don't have the episode on my computer anywhere. So unedited, here is an interview I did November 8th, 2007 with the great, legendary, late Bill LaCoin. May he rest in peace. Thanks for listening, friends, and thank you so much for the donations. Please keep the donations coming. Without your donations, this show would die a horrible, putrid, stench-filled, or legendary Bill LaCoin death. All right, I don't know what the hell I'm saying. I'm going to get out of here and let this roll. Thank you so much for listening, friends. I will talk to you very soon on the next episode. I'm probably going to do a regular Rock and Roll Geek Show on Thursday, if I can stay awake, because I have Butler's practice again tonight, and I'm running on fumes. Have insomnia, wake up in the middle of the night, and it's a mess. All right, friends? It's just a mess. All right. Thanks for listening. Here's Bill LaCoin. We'll talk to you soon.
Hi, I'm getting ready to call Bill LaCoin. I'm a little bit nervous, as usual. So here we go. Check, 1-2.
Coin Globe Entertainment, this is Nick.
Hello, can I speak to Bill LaCoin, please? This is Michael Butler.
Hold on, please. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, the name?
Michael Butler. I'm scheduled to do an interview with him at 2 o'clock.
Okay, hold on, please.
Listen to this music. I love this music in the background.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, Michael.
Hi, is this Bill Acoin?
It is.
Hi, Mr. Acoin. Thanks a lot for doing this. I really appreciate it.
That's okay. I'm glad we finally got to do it. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I know. You seem like a very busy man.
Yeah, it's been a little nuts, so, to say the least. But in any case, let's do it.
Okay, so what are you doing nowadays?
Well, I mean, other than working with Lordy and a few other acts, well, we started a new company, and the company's called O'Coin Globe, and I got out of the business for a while. I was kind of lost with the whole hip-hop thing. It wasn't my style, and I loved the rock and roll. And ironically, a friend of mine who has become my partner told me about Lordy. And I said, well, your vision has never been my favorite. He said, oh, no, you have to look at this. You must look at it. And I looked at it and obviously was very surprised. And I said, you know, this is really phenomenal. I think we could help break this group around the world, but they probably have a manager and so forth. So I called Tommy, who happened to also be the president of the KISS fan club in Finland, and he said, oh, no, our manager has left, and we're going to be looking for another manager. So I said, well, can we come over and spend some time with you? And we actually did. We actually went on tour with them for about a week. And after that, we all decided to get together. So that kind of started a whole new phase of my life, and very exciting. And there's a couple of other acts that we handle in the States here, but that kind of got everything all started again. And that's pretty much what's happened in the last 8 or 9 months.
I don't know a lot about Lordy. Did you manage them after, or did you come on to them after they won that contest? It was some kind of like...
During the contest, actually. And hold on a second. Let's see who this is here. No? Okay. In any case, I had heard about them during the contest, and I actually watched during the contest. And after the contest is when we got together, when they went on tour. And so that's where we finally get to meet each other.
I really should have done my research on Lordy, but do they have a record out yet?
Yes, yeah, they're signed to Sony in Finland.
Okay.
And it's called Rockalypse. And yes, you should have done some homework. You're absolutely correct.
Well, I know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I grew up in the 70s, so there's some of my favorite bands that I don't really need to do research about because I love these bands so much, like Stars. I wanted to ask you about Stars, but if you want to finish up on Lordy, I would like to do that.
No, that's it. I mean, Lordy, we just finished a couple of tours. They headlined with Ozzy on Ozfest this summer, and they just finished a tour with O Negative and Type O Negative, and that's... that went exceptionally well. In fact, the last show was last night, and they're on their way back to Finland today. So that's that, but that's going incredibly well.
Okay, so they
anyway, go ahead, ask me about some of the other acts.
They were touring the States?
Yeah, they did. They headlined with Ozzy at Ozfest all summer,
okay.
Or not all summer, for about a month and a half.
Okay.
And then, yeah, and they just finished the tour in the States with O Negative. So.
You think it's going to be possible to break that band in the States?
Yes, of course. You think I would get involved if I didn't think
right.
that?
Right.
You sound like people who asked me the same question in the 70s with KISS. Well, do you really think you can do anything with this band?
Well, I was a KISS fan, so I would probably be a Lordy fan too. So I'm actually hoping that kind of stuff does break.
Well, you should investigate it, and you'll get the whole impact of it. And it's good. So, go ahead, let's move on, Michael. Go.
Now, there was a band. One of my favorite bands was Stars.
Right.
And I've actually had right. them on the show before, and I've actually become friends with those guys. How did you meet the guys in Stars?
Well, Stars wasn't my signing, actually. It was Sean Delaney who found them and loved them and brought them into the company. And then, of course, we signed them to Capitol. And we went through a number of albums. Capitol never really totally got behind it. I really think the head of promotion at Capitol really wanted to have a solid radio hit, and he never thought that they had a solid radio hit.
Huh.
And so it was, and that kind of was always a real pain because we just couldn't get through. And the head of promotion at a major label then was really like a god at the label. You know, I mean, the other was a president and head of A&R, but nothing happened unless the head of promotion was, you know, really behind it. And I, you know, he kind of gave us some latitude about doing things, but he never really got behind it, no matter what we did. And believe me, we tried to get him to get off his chair and to really get behind Stars, but it didn't happen. And Coin Management, we put about $500,000 behind them and touring and everything else that Capitol didn't. And so when it started all coming apart, you know, when Michael's wife left him, and the record company wasn't sure they wanted to do another album, and it was just, and Sean wasn't sure about the band anymore. It was like, it was kind of one of those things, and we dropped them, which I don't think they appreciated very much. I mean, I think that they thought that if we kept fighting that something would happen, but we had gone so far. Because it was really Sean's project, I mean, when he kind of thought it was kind of over or that it wasn't coming together, that's when we finally made the decision. But and also the cost of doing it all over again with another label and everything, it was just not going to be in the cards for us. But in any case, I know that the group always felt bad about it and kind of assumed I just dropped them and didn't care. But the truth of the matter is, I mean, I love their music. I mean, and obviously you do too. If you listen to those albums, some of the songs are great and the lyrics are incredible. I mean, Michael was just phenomenal. And it's a strange industry. I think if I had to do it again, Michael, I probably wouldn't have given them so much at the beginning. You know, having the big show, going out with Kiss, having everything happened too quickly. And I think when Capitol didn't see the big reaction from everything we were doing, that kind of turned them off, and it kind of was a backlash, I guess. I think if I were doing it again, I would do it slower. I'd let them start in smaller clubs and let the fans build up before I would go as far as I did. But, you know, it's one of those things that happened, and although I felt bad about it, you know, we had to move on. So in any case, go ahead.
Well, I think Michael Lee Smith was one of the great frontmen of all time. And for this radio promotions guy, no radio hit, he didn't hear any radio hits. I think that all those records from top to bottom were practically all radio hits, in my opinion.
Well, he never thought so. He didn't believe it. And, I just couldn't get him off center with that. He just did not believe there was anything that radio... You know, I assume that he went to radio and he just didn't get the reaction he wanted. And when he didn't get the reaction he wanted, he went on to the next Capitol act. You know, that's the unfortunate thing about being with a major label. You know, if it doesn't happen when they start working it, then no matter what they tell you, they go on to the next... than going to the next artist, and I think that's what's happened. And after we went through a couple of albums, either he just didn't like it enough, or he wasn't behind it enough, or didn't believe in it enough. But when nothing broke, by the time we get to the third album, it was pretty much over. Although I had a great relationship with Capitol from the president down, you know, and I think they wouldn't have even gone to that third album. I think it had gotten that bad, but. You know, I mean, it's hard to sometimes second guess what they think and what they tell you, what they don't tell you.
Well, so you must have been pretty good at the management because you got four albums out of Capitol.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and I think, you know, look, I think in a way it was done because I had a lot of political pull there from the head of EMI, who was at the label there, to the head of A&R, who was a close friend, and the president of the label as well. So you know, I had so much, you know, so many friends and so much the political pull there that I think, you know, I think what happened is they kept saying, oh, let Bill do another, let him do another album, where I don't think they would have, you know, and I think our biggest stumbling block there was we never, ever got through the head of promotion. Just never happened, and it was pretty obvious by the time we got to the third album. And I think again they did the last album was done, I think, because I had political pull there and I had so many friends there that they said, well, maybe let's give them one more shot. I think but I think by that time the promotion department had written us off.
And ironically, I think those last two albums are their best albums.
Well, you know, I think if you go back and listen, they're quite spectacular, and I kind of hope that some other artists might cover some of the songs that Michael wrote, because I think some of them are incredible, but, you know, it's like a lot of times, you know, no matter how hard you try, it isn't in the cards, or at least it wasn't for us then.
Do you ever talk to those guys anymore in Stars?
Yeah, Richie Rano, I talked to quite a bit. I was at a performance with Michael and the surviving members of Stars, and Doobie wouldn't even talk to me.
He was really
still pissed off.
Huh.
At me. Oh yeah, he sat. He went down to the dressing room. I walked in to say hi. Wouldn't even talk to me. I mean, he's still holding it against me without a doubt.
So I guess they blame you for not being. You know, Capitol.
Oh yeah.
I think Capitol never really had a finger on the pulse of rock music.
Well, it's very possible. I mean, you know, I mean, again, it was, you know, you're in the midst of it all and you want it desperately to break, and you know that the artists are talented, and you love the material, and, you know, and that's why I put so much money behind it. I mean, for me to decide to put $500,000 behind it, and you know, we never told the guys that at all, because I was waiting until they broke, and then we'd say, well, look, if we're going to recoup the money or whatever, but because there was no reason to at the point they were at. And but, you know, it's you know, as much as we were for them, you know, just I couldn't crack that guy.
So actually, at the end of your relationship, they kind of owed you money.
Well, a lot of money. It probably was closer to $1 million by the time we were done, and they never really knew how much we were behind them, you know, and really tried desperately to break through and put as much finances behind it as we could. You know, the touring was terribly expensive for a band that didn't really have any money coming in. But we let them do the big show, and we let them do everything they wanted pretty much. And it was, you know, but that's because we believed in them so much. It was really, you know, at that point when we were trying to break them, it was a top priority. It was Kiss and them. You know, it was a hard one to learn. Let's put it that way.
Do you think that if you didn't have such success with Kiss, that you may have tried to go back and collect that money from them?
No, I know that they were unhappy about everything. We were obviously doing very well with Kiss, and I just let it go. I never made an issue of it. I don't think they even know how much we put behind them, to be honest with you.
Well, I think a lot of people will agree with me. I think they were one of the most deserving, as far as the quality of songwriting. It was one of those bands that just should have made it and didn't. It was like one of the most.
You know, but it happens all the time.
Yeah, I
mean, there's
plenty of
great artists that just never, ever seem to break through. You know, I see them all the time and say, oh, my God, what an incredible artist, an incredible band. And, you know, they had their shot and nothing ever happened for whatever reason. You know, and, you know, it's sometimes it is the luck of the draw. You know, it is who happens to be at the right place at the right time. And those things you just can't control.
Yeah. I guess that would be, would you consider it a management failure? I don't think
it
would be a management
failure. Anytime it doesn't work, you consider it a management failure. I mean, the only thing that I got out of it is you learn from it. You learn probably what to do or what not to do or how to try to make it work a different way. As I said before, I think I don't think I would have done it quite the same way by putting so much money behind it, giving them everything at first. I would have probably started it smaller and let the fan base grow first, and then come in with whatever they needed. So, you know, it's a learning curve that you you take. And you know, I mean, I've made a couple of certainly. And listen, that one, at least we got behind and we really wanted to break. I mean, the one I keep getting hammered about is turning down Van Halen.
Yeah, and that was one of my questions.
And they desperately wanted to be with us. Huh. It wasn't like I was trying to catch them. They really wanted to be with us. So you never know.
So what happened with the Van Halen, now that you bring up the topic? Did you just not like the band, or just...
No, it's not that I didn't like the guys per se. I learned a big lesson there. I flew them to New York instead of going and seeing them in their own element with their own fans. And that was kind of taking them out of their own comfortable environment, put them in a rehearsal studio and to see what it was like. Well, everyone was nervous, you know. David didn't sing that well. I wasn't sure that there was a song that we could really get behind. And, you know, although Eddie was good, you know, it was the band or total. So I said no, of course. They remind me every time I see them. And but a couple of years later, I had lunch with Ted Templeman, and I uh-huh. said, you know, you did Van Halen, and I turned them down. He said, well, I did too. I said, what do you mean? You signed them. He said, no, I wanted to sign Eddie. And then when the band said, no, we're a band, I wanted to get rid of Dave and put Sammy Hagar in
wow.
from the beginning, because I knew that Dave didn't have that good a voice. And I said, holy cow. You know. And then, of course, you know that it was Ted Templeman who did the covers of those great songs and did those great arrangements that broke them.
Oh, really?
You know,
Ted Templeman did the arrangements on the cover tunes.
He did everything, yeah. He did everything.
Huh, you know
he
that.
He produced them and did the arrangements, yeah. So he knew that they didn't have a song either. He said, I knew they didn't have a song. That's why we did the cover tunes. So I felt a little better, but not that much better, because I still would have liked to have managed them.
Right. Well, that cover that they do of that Linda Ronstadt tune is probably written by somebody else. You're No Good. One of the great covers of all time. So credit to Ted Templeman.
It is. And Ted Templeman is a phenomenal producer. I couldn't have gotten anyone better. And, of course, he had all the power at Warner. So that made it even stronger for them. They actually wound up in a great position because of Ted, I mean, without a doubt. You know, and obviously... you know, I love what they've done and everything, and obviously feel bad that I didn't sign them. So,
well, there are these rumors now about when Gene Simmons supposedly, you know, he claims he discovered Van Halen. So this is around the same time, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, it is, and actually, a lot of people did. The reason wasn't just Gene. A few people told me about them from the West Coast. That's why I flew them to New York. But that was my big mistake. I should have flown to the West Coast and seen them at the Starwood Club where they always played. And you know, you learn your lessons as you go along. You know, I guess. My ego was a little out of place then, and I decided, well, I'll just fly him to New York and see what happens, and that was a big lesson to learn. Believe me,
it might have been cheaper for only one ticket compared
to.
Well,
it didn't have anything to do with being cheaper. It was like I'll bring them to me as opposed to me going to them, and I really should have gone to them.
There's also a rumor that the reason Gene wanted to work with them is because they wanted Eddie Van Halen as to take Ace Frehley's place.
No,
not true.
No.
Okay,
no.
A rock and roll myth.
Yeah.
Oh, well, now that we're on the subject of Kiss, I guess, do you get tired of answering Kiss questions?
No, I'm doing it all the time. I do about 3 or 4 conventions a year all over the world, Kiss conventions, and so I get questions all the time, whether I want it or not, so ask me.
Well, I there's some super Kiss geeks, and I am not as knowledgeable. Those guys will ask questions like they're super hardcore questions that I have no idea about. So I'm going to keep it a little bit more general.
Okay.
So you've probably been asked this.
Michael, you didn't do your homework.
Well, Kiss.
Well, you did about Stars, but you know Stars backwards and forwards.
Well,
okay.
Kiss got me. Kiss was what turned me on to rock and roll. They made me want to play in a band, and you know they were my Beatles. As probably right. most of these kids, but most okay. of these kids that go to the Kiss conventions aren't musicians. They're just like super Kiss geeks.
Right, exactly.
And they're kind of, I would equate them with people who like Star Trek. They collect all the figurines and all that
well,
stuff.
Well, they do, but you know, I find a lot of Kiss fans in bands who said, I wouldn't have picked up a guitar, I wouldn't have played the drums, I wouldn't, if it wasn't for Kiss.
Absolutely,
so
absolutely.
It goes both ways.
How did you meet the guys in KISS, anyway? That's probably the question you've been asked most, I know.
Probably. I was working in television and film. I was a director, producer. And I did a television show about contemporary music for, which was on NBC and everything. And they wanted to have younger fans, basically, to the network. They felt that the network was kind of skewing too old. And so I did a show called Flipside, which with contemporary artists like John Lennon and Stevie Wonder. And when I did these shows, every week they would say, "That's not what we meant, Bill. Don't you understand? We're the network, and we should have people like Barbra Streisand and Frank Sinatra." I said, no. This is contemporary music. This is going to appeal to a younger audience, and that's what you asked me to do, and that's what I want to do. So anyway, so the bloodletting happened every week, and after I finished the 13-week series, I said, I can't deal with this. I'm not going to deal with this. I think I'll go into the music industry, on the music side. And Gene used to see my name at the end of the show every week, and he'd write me handwritten notes. Huh. About please come and see Kiss, please come and see us, and so forth. And after it was over, I was out to dinner with an account executive who was from an agency that was sponsoring the shows. And I said, I'm going to go and see this group. Do you want to come along with me? And he said yes, and we would go to this old sleazy hotel called The Diplomat. Mm-hmm. And literally with holes in the floor and everything else. It was really bad. And they had rented the second floor ballroom, and as you climbed the stairs, you had to step out over holes that were in the stairs. And they would get a couple of their friends that had groups, and they'd all get together and rent the room and then hope that someone would come and see them. And then, of course, they'd charge their friends to come in and see them. Anyway, so I went to see them, and I said, this is really interesting because they're not only the kind of characters, but they're real performers. And so I talked to Gene and Paul after. I said, why don't you come to the office and let's see whether there's something there. And they came to the office, I think, a few days later, and I said, give me 30 days. If I can get you a contract, then we want to manage you. And if I don't, you can either leave or stay or whatever. And they said, oh, yes. And I got the contract within 30 days. And that was the beginning of the relationship. An exciting one and thrilling for me. And I know for them. And it was the beginning of a whole new career.
So they were doing the makeup before you.
They had part of the makeup. I'm the one who said you have the white face. The white face has to be on everyone. Some of them had partial. Some of them had all. And I did that. But they basically had the idea themselves. Yes.
So they were pretty much kind of like doing a dolls kind of thing, right?
No, they were initially. They were actually in drag. They were actually in drag, okay, like the dolls. And when the dolls started to make it, they didn't want to be a copy. And that's how it developed into Kiss.
Oh, that's funny because I went to see Paul Stanley, and he didn't have anything good to say about the New York Dolls. He said they sucked.
I don't think that was the case. I mean, I think they were kind of street ruffians and kind of whatever went happened. But I there was a uniqueness about them, and I think they kind of self-destructed. But no, I disagree with Paul with that. I think there was something there. I mean, I don't think maybe they didn't have someone guiding them the way they should, or they didn't have the drive. Maybe they got too much too soon. A lot of that happens when an artist gets too much praise. We didn't have that with Kiss because everyone said they weren't going to make it. So yeah. We had just the opposite. Here's the Dolls. Yay, the New York Dolls, whoopee. And getting all the praise, and this is the new rock and roll and everything else. And, oh, no, not Kiss. Kiss with that makeup and everything never happened. So we were at the opposite side of where they were, certainly.
So that was the first band you ever managed was Kiss?
Yeah, well, technically I managed a group in high school that I signed to Verve Records. Nothing ever happened because Verve changed their head of the company and they got bought out and so forth. So it that all kind of didn't happen. And I really didn't know what I was doing. I just found a band, an artist I thought was great. And they said, yeah, we'll sign them. It came and went kind of. But the first time I ever really seriously did it and was in a position to do it was Kiss.
So did you just always have this feeling that you just had the management skills in your blood?
But I always had the feeling I was a director. See, in television, I directed the shows as well as produced them. So I always felt that if I'm going to go into management, I want to give artists direction. And, of course, the Kiss show made it even more. I mean, I certainly was into doing that, obviously. And so it was a perfect fit. Here they had a director who wanted to do more than just sit behind a desk as a manager, which I never really felt like doing. And on top of it, a producer-director that could bring those elements to a stage show as well as to their career. So although I don't think we all knew it at the time, it was a good match.
Was it your idea to bring Bob Ezrin into the mix?
Yes, we're looking for a new producer, and obviously I knew Bob did Alice Cooper, so I called him just to see whether or not he'd be interested. It made sense. He kind of knew that whole genre. Mm-hmm. Alice broke down a lot of doors for us, you know, and so and he basically said no until his son said, "What? You've got to do Kiss. You've got to do Kiss. That's the group." And yeah. So he called me and said, "My son says I have to do this." So that's how Bob actually did Kiss.
Yeah, I had him on the show, and he told me that story, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think they would have been successful if you hadn't managed them?
God, who knows? I mean, sometimes timing and... in life, like we talked about with stars, it's just a perfect match. And I think in this particular case, it was a perfect match. It's something I wanted to do. They had the drive to do it. They listened. We listened to each other. And we fought through many times when people were saying, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. We ran out of money a few times. I mean, you know the story about me putting a whole tour on my right. American Express yeah. card when I really didn't have a dime. So we took gambles. All of that stuff. I mean, sometimes you need a tremendous amount of commitment. And also that kind of inner feeling that you're going to do this, and I think probably it's easier when you're younger. But... nevertheless, it's the way I've really lived my life, and I had the same problem with Billy Idol when I brought him over. That everyone said, "Oh, how foolish of you! He never made it in England. He's a punk rocker. Punk never made it in the States. And now you're forcing us to deal with Billy Idol." I mean, really, it was almost the same thing.
Was yeah. Billy Idol when you started managing Billy Idol? Was he still in Generation X?
Yes, yeah, I did it secretly because the big American manager, with money should not be part of the punk scene. And Billy was concerned that people would talk about, "Well, you're selling out." So I said, "Well, I'll do it without people knowing it for about a year." And did the last Generation X album.
Oh,
and I made a deal with, I told Billy, I said, "Look, I'll make a deal with you. We'll do one more Generation X album. If it doesn't work, you'll leave the group and come to the States." And he said, "Okay."
Okay, well, that answered my question, because I was going to ask you if you caused him to quit.
We made the deal. He actually said, when I said, "Would you come to the States?" And he said, "No, I really think we should do another Generation X album." So I used that to develop a team around Billy. I brought Keith Forsey in, and I kind of knew the record label was not going to work it, basically. And I told the record label, some of these tracks we can use again when we bring them to the States. Because they, as far as they were concerned in England, it was over for Gen X. And so I basically took Billy and took him off of Chrysalis Limited and then signed him to Chrysalis Inc. in the States. And they didn't want him. I mean, the reason I got away with it is because I knew the two owners of the company, Chris Wright and Terry Ellis. And basically, the New York and the company in the States let me know, "Why are you doing this? You're putting pressure on me. He's not what's right for us now. It's not the image of Chrysalis Records here. Wow. We don't really believe in it." I mean, it was really, it was close to the Kiss thing.
Wow.
They must have been
eating their hat afterwards, because those records were huge.
Yeah, I know. Well, look at it. I mean, I just totally believe in Billy, and even today, I really believe that I know Billy better than most. But when I got out of the business, he got managed by a couple of other people, and he hasn't had an album since. I've often thought, "God, I'd love to manage him again, but it may just not be the time to do it."
Why'd you stop managing him?
Well, I was just worn out. I mean, don't forget, from 73 to 87, I pretty much never took a vacation or anything. Mm-hmm. I just burnt myself out. I just had to get out. It was too much of everything. It was just craziness. And then, of course, when I got out, hip-hop started coming in. And then when I thought about getting back into the business in the 90s, it was all hip-hop. And I said, "Oh, Christ." Anyway, toward the end of the 90s, I started thinking about it again. And I started talking to artists and this and that. And, of course, then it officially happened when of course, Lordy happened. And I was working with two acts from Florida. One is Nothing Rhymes with Orange, which is kind of an English-type yeah. band, really. And the other is Crossbreed that had a semi-hit out, which is a heavy metal band. And we're doing a new album with them now. So we're bringing Nothing Rhymes with Orange to England for a few dates, and they also played in England before. But in any case, and I think we're thinking about starting a small label in England. So a lot of things are happening.
And you were managing Steve Stevens in a different band. You introduced him to Billy Idol?
No, I took Steve out of a young pop band because I said, wow, what an incredible guitar player. And my head of promotion said, ooh, he's incredible. And I said, yes, you're right. So I signed him not knowing what we were going to do with him, literally not knowing what we were going to do with him. And when Billy came over, obviously he needed a new band, so I put him with Steve, and he hated Steve. He hated Steve because he thought he played too much. He said, he plays too much. He's not a real rock and roll guitarist. I said, yeah, but he's brilliant, and I think this will work. And, of course, Billy went along with me, and, of course, it worked. Billy thought Steve always played too much. He didn't think he was a real rock and roll guitarist.
I kind of agree with Billy, but he kind of owes his success to Steve Stevens in a big part.
Yeah, that's right. Well, together, both of them. And not only that, they benefited from it, and they also helped each other in many ways. So, you know, I remember one time, I'll tell you a story about one time when I made an arrangement with Steve to have a new Kramer guitar, one that was Steve Stevens' guitar. And he designed it, was multicolors, and he comes in, the prototype comes in, it's gorgeous, and you know, it's just shiny new, and we're in the midst of the studio at Electric Lady doing Rebel Yell, and Billy walks in, he sees Steve with this new shiny guitar, uh-huh. And as he walks by Steve, he takes his apartment key out of his
nice.
Pocket and scrapes it,
good.
Right? And Steve, I thought, was going to bust into tears, and like, I couldn't believe it, and he says, why did you do that? Hold on. I have to take this a second. Hello? Hello? AJ? Okay, we're going to unlock the door because they locked the doors. Okay, well, I'll send. Okay, very good. All righty. Bye. Michael? They're here. Go ahead and let it. They're about a block away. Okay, sorry, okay. Mike.
I'm sorry. Five more minutes if you have the time. That will.
Go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
I kind of lost my train of thought now. So Rocksteady.
I was finishing. That's when Billy scraped the guitar.
Yeah,
and Steve was almost in tears. And anyway, Steve says, Billy, why'd you do that? And Billy's walking into the control room. He looks back and he says, because rock and roll isn't pretty.
Yes, there you go.
Was it
Rocksteady Productions when you were managing Billy Idol?
No, it was O'Coin, Rocksteady Productions and O'Coin Management, you know. But Rocksteady was really set up for Kiss. Oh, really?
Okay.
That was that. But, you know, yeah, it was. We still had it. You know, and in between we did Billy Squire, so.
Yeah. Did you do Billy Squire and Piper?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm the one who told Billy he had to go solo. And only because he was strong, and I think initially he was concerned about going solo. He wasn't sure he could do it. So that's how Piper happened. But then, and I said, look at Billy, I don't think you're too strong. It's never going to happen with you just kind of diplomatically saying, okay, it's a democracy. It's Piper band. And I told him, I think you have to go solo. And that's when that happened. So.
Now, that leads me to something that kind of ties in with Paul Stanley. There were always rumors about Billy Squire and as well as Paul Stanley about their sexuality.
Yeah.
Do you think, I don't know if they were gay or not, and I don't care, really, but do you think that if they were and if they came out of the closet when they were on top, do you think it would have affected their success?
Well, I mean, that's something you kind of have to ask them. It really depends on the time. You know, it's like everything else; it's all timing. And sometimes things affect other people, and sometimes they don't. You know, a rock and roll fan might not have, or it might just confuse them, or whatever. And you know, but in any case, one way or another, there was never any indication that they were. I mean, I think that because they, in some cases, people just thought that they were, but there was never any indication they were.
Well, when I was a kid, I just assumed, it was always just like everybody, it was like assumed knowledge. Oh, Paul Stanley, he's bisexual. It was just like assumed that he was. Assume that he was, just for the sake of, if he came to you and said, Bill, I'm thinking of coming out of the closet, would you have advised him against it or said, do what you want to do?
Probably at that time, yeah. That had happened, I would have said, I don't think the label or anyone else is going to get behind it. I think it's going to be afraid of it. And if that was the case, I would have said that because, the time and place, things have changed over and over again since then. And it's, I just think it would have been the wrong time, especially in the middle of putting out a new album or doing something. You can only handle so many challenges at once, and you shouldn't put yourself under so much pressure. I mean, if you really want to do it, that's something else. If it's something that is close to your heart and no matter what it is, and you have to do it, okay. Then what you do is you sit down with everyone and say, hey, how are we going to do this? How's the best way to do it? But I think if you don't have to do it or if it's not so close to your gut, then I think you got to be very realistic, and I would have advised them certainly not to do it if that had been the case.
What about in the year 2007? Would you still advise the same?
Well, I think they could certainly do it now, and I think that the no matter what the right-wing movement is in this country, the next generation doesn't have that feeling, and I think that anyone could easily do that today, I think, and as long as they were strong within themselves. I mean, they can't be weak because there's going to be controversy and there's going to be a battle over it no matter what, whether it's big or small. But, I think today it could easily, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
For any artist.
Had no effect on Rob Halford, I don't think.
No, and I took Rob on quite a few tours with Kiss, opening up for Kiss.
Oh, really?
Okay.
One last question. This is kind of just something I'm curious about. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be in the entertainment business. I think I wanted to be in television and film. I mean, that's where I was headed, and there was no question about it. It's one of those odd things that changed my life, that introduced me to Kiss, and then that happened. But there was no question that I saw myself as a director in film and television. And that's where I was headed. And that's where it was set up to me, and I had all the opportunities. I directed commercials in New York and won Clio's and did some shows, pilots, of which the one was Flipside and was picked up. So, I mean, that was really where I was headed. And, you never know. Life takes certain curves and you have to deal with it. So that's it. I have to go, Michael.
Well, Bill Acoin, thank you so much for coming out. It was a real honor to talk to you.
Okay, Michael. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.
Well.
Bye.
It's a rock and roll geek train wreck.